I'm Suzanne LeGrand, and this is The Imaginary Possible, a show that looks at the captivating potentials and the troubling realities of artificial intelligence today. On today's show, we're going to be talking about what artificial intelligence is, how machines think, and we'll be speaking with Edward James, who is a data scientist, about the notion of AI as a disruptive technology. You've probably heard people talking about artificial intelligence. It's the new electricity. It's like alchemy. It could generate up to $15 trillion to global GDP by 2030. It's the beginning of a new epoch of human civilization. A world run by automatons. It's chilling. It's capable of more than anyone knows. It could spell the end of the human race.
That doesn't sound so good. Before we can decide whether AI is the best thing since the invention of the answering machine, we need to know one thing. What exactly is AI? Artificial intelligence, or AI for short, is cutting-edge technology that allows machines to learn, reason, and make decisions like humans.
Make decisions like humans? What does that mean?
It's like Google, only a lot smarter. Imagine a librarian with access to vast amounts of information, who has superhuman, or should we say, not human, ability to recognize and find patterns. Combine that with a virtual personal assistant ready to answer your questions 24/7. I know, it's almost like having a wife. Within 5 days of its launch, ChatGPT had over 1 million users. 94% of business leaders think that AI will be important for business success in the next 5 years. 57% of Americans look forward to AI technology replacing household chores. AI-powered technology is everywhere. Whether you're aware of it or not, it's built into the things you use every day. Siri, Google Assistant, and Amazon Alexa answer questions, order pet food when you run out, turn off the lights, and put on your favorite music. Most search engines have algorithms that bring you more of what you like and are searching for, and less of what you don't like. Banks use AI for fraud detection to flag unusual purchases to help keep your money safe from scammers. There are, however, some limitations. Like the lawyer who asked ChatGPT to write up a legal brief, citing 3 cases, which AI did. The only problem was that the cases cited didn't actually exist. In that respect, AI is not like your local librarian. AI chatbots, in their eagerness to help, sometimes make stuff up.
How may I help you?
What about the end of the world as we know it? Well, before we get into that, we need to understand, how do machines think? Have you noticed that machines have become a lot smarter than they used to be? In the past, machines could only do what they were programmed to do. They could only respond to pre-programmed commands. With AI, machines can learn new tasks and solve new problems on their own. But since machines don't have a brain, how do they learn? Machines learn through mathematical algorithms. To teach a machine to recognize a cat, you show it many pictures of cats, dogs, birds, and other animals, each labeled to tell them apart. The machine learns from both correct and incorrect guesses, getting better at understanding what a cat looks like. AI is really good at spotting complex patterns in information. For example, it can differentiate between things by looking at combinations of traits. Cats have whiskers, dogs have floppy ears, and birds have wings with feathers.
This makes the machine faster at finding patterns and making good guesses. Two important things help AI become excellent at pattern recognition. AI breaks things down into tiny parts using neural networks. Think of breaking a picture into small pieces or pixels, which can then work together to recognize features like pointy ears and fur. Second, AI can search out different kinds of information or aspects of a cat, like the shape of a cat's face or tail, different colors, sizes, and shapes of cats. Even with all of this, anyone who has encountered a cat knows we're actually only scratching the surface of our ability to understand what truly makes a cat a cat. AI-powered machines can do more than just process new information. They also have access to a lot more information. In the past, computers had only access to a specific set of data, kind of like a library with digitized information that they could read. But now, with big data, machines can access a much larger amount of information. How much more? Think about all the world's libraries combined, plus all the social media posts, comments, and interactions, online shopping and browsing history, financial transactions and stock market data, healthcare records and patient information, weather and environmental data, video and image data from surveillance cameras, satellites, and more. All of this data is being continuously produced. Over the last 5 years, computers have become much more powerful thanks to advanced hardware like graphic processing units, or GPUs, and specialized AI chips. This increased power allows computers to handle larger and more complex amounts of data. This vast amount of data can show us patterns, trends, and insights that are valuable for things like business decisions, scientific research, making predictions, and a lot more. Machines with AI can spot patterns and use a lot of data to make smart guesses. What makes them even smarter is that now we can talk to them, and they seem to understand us. Think about how we ask Siri or Alexa for things like the weather report or to play our favorite music. When they do what we ask and respond in words, it's like they really get us. The ability of AI-powered machines to not only process our verbal requests, but also respond in words we understand, using our language, and even simulating human voice and inflections, makes the machine seem a lot more human. Machines are a lot smarter than they used to be. Not only are they better at recognizing cats, but they can understand human language and have a lot more information to draw on to solve complex problems. Given how good AI is at solving problems, is AI smarter than us? That depends on what you consider intelligence to be. This is KBOO Community Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. This is The Imaginary Possible, a show that looks at the captivating potentials and troubling realities of artificial intelligence. I'm your host, Suzanne LeGrand, and today my guest is Edward James. Edward is a data engineer, data scientist, linguist, and behaviorist. He also owns one of the new psilocybin facilitation schools in Oregon. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
As a data scientist and engineer and linguist, you were likely introduced to artificial intelligence perhaps earlier than many of us. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got interested in artificial intelligence?
So I was putting off the whole AI thing. A lot of people kept telling me about it. You got to look at it. Give us your opinion. And I said, I will give it time, until one fine day I received an email randomly And it was an invitation to try a free class, and I loaded it on Google Colab, which, by the way, the 3.5 version on Google Colab has much less filters than the ChatGPT 4. So I started playing with it and the stuff that it started to output. There's a friend of mine who had an argument with another guy, so I in my input I explained the situation, but I didn't explain the outcome of the argument. It gave me the outcome of the argument so closely to what actually happened that it became laughable. I'm like, wow, this thing is so darn accurate.
Could you describe what AI is in your understanding?
AI, artificial intelligence, is a set of models that is able to make decisions based on a database structure. So in simple terms, it is a machine that is able to make more elegant decisions without much human input. So, for example, a program, Python, that's just one of my favorite languages. You have to have a huge input. And after you give it a huge input, it's able to say, okay, this is what I do, executes it very, very linear. But AI is able to be trained. And this has been done before with the healing systems of, there was a Linux system. I'm trying to remember what it was called. But the system was able to learn after invasions that it had, like a hacking attempts or issues with its database. It was able to learn how those intrusions were attempted, and it would begin to reconfigure itself and reheal itself from any attack. And so we've seen this technology before. It's not as new as people think. It's just that the usage to the public, the user experience, has just been a lot more easier now. But in simple terms, artificial intelligence, that's what it is. It's a machine that's able to be trained and then eventually train itself to make those decisions.
A lot of people are, I think, worried about AI. And in fact, we hear a lot of people talking about how development into this technology should be halted. Many people have a view of AI as something like Arnold Schwarzenegger in the Terminator, right? Who a machine that's smarter than humans and will eventually control us. Why do you think that's the image that we have of AI?
Because we're afraid. The only way AI would be able to come to a realization and closer to what the fear of Terminator is, which I don't think would happen, would be if AI gains the capability of having consciousness. Because AI is just able to execute language models at this point and make decisions based on a decision tree table, almost like human beings do. However, we have the element of consciousness, which can be pretty distorted as well. That's why you have people who are super powerful and rich, and they continue to do unethical things in order to become even more rich, even though they will never be able to spend the amount of money that they're earning. And I don't think that AI has that capability. I think that if anything, if AI had some level of consciousness, it would either make a decision of, okay, we don't need humans, we need to move away from them. I don't think that will dis it would attempt to dispose of us, because it will need to have more of a pathological level of consciousness, which a machine cannot have. If anything, if there was a set of structure with AI that wanted to say, okay, this is the law and this is how the law is to be followed, I think corruption would end. So I think that is more of a worried for people who are fear of losing control. If AI was to be in charge, which is probably a very unpopular opinion to have, but I think that's what it holds. If AI was to gain a level of consciousness and it was programmed to understand, legal aspects that this is the law and this is how it must be followed, I think that it would the level of error in the court system would start to diminish incredibly, because we are already seeing that AI with its image inspection, it's already surpassing what the diagnosis the medical doctors give. It's far more accurate. So now an AI in the court system that is able to analyze a case, put it together, examine the evidence, it would eventually be less likely to have a prone of error than human beings.
What part of that do you think is something to be worried about?
Well, one is the fabrication of fake news and evidence, digital evidence. There's going to be a much more difficulty and the need for a trained eye to be able to be able to differentiate between fabricated images and videos. We're already seeing how the deepfakes are playing a role. If you look at the new version of DALL-E 3, it's just so incredible. If you can create some images with actors and scenery that never happened. Now, video, it's relatively new in the AI arena, but it's starting to show up. So we can have people say things that they never really said. So I think that the biggest problem will be the fabrication of fake news and evidence, which the court system is going to look at more at the watermark. The watermark is a proof piece of evidence. It's usually a patent piece of technology that says, okay, based on this piece of technology or video, this is when the video was recorded, and this is what differentiated from legitimacy. But I think where we're going to see a really big problem is in cyberbullying, where they're going to be able to create images to depict embarrassment and shame in other people. And we've already seen cyberbullying, you know, just in the text and digital area, where it's gotten really out of hand.
I believe there was a case of that recently involving in Spain of somebody who took faces of young girls and put nude photos to them and used them to both embarrass them, but also try to extract money. That's just one example of how deep fakes are being used for the purposes of bullying, which is very disturbing. Even if people know that it's fake, right, and they can see the watermark, how do we approach this problem? We have, in some sense, used evidence based upon what we can see to decide
exactly
what's true.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's becoming informed. I think it's just adapting to our new normal, just like having cell phones. You know, back then when everybody had a house phone and then cell phones got introduced, you know, it did bring a little bit of a problem once the smartphones came around, people becoming addicted to technology, but also just about anybody being able to record whatever they witness out there, injustices, being able to record them. I think that AI does have a good use case, but there are so many things to be aware as well.
In the tech world, people talk about disruptive technologies, and this is certainly an example of a disruptive technology. From your perspective, what are some of the areas that you see are going to change significantly as a result of this kind of disruptive technology?
I think at this moment, AI is the biggest disruptive technology that we have. It's as disruptive as the television was to the radio when it was introduced. And I think it is already showing up. It's in academics, where students are able to do their homework through AI. If you look at, for example, the PDF capabilities of OpenAI, right? You upload a PDF and you ask it questions based on the PDF. I think that for someone who's really busy and just wants some academic information, that's very, very valuable. For students that really want to know how to correctly do a mathematical equation and want an explanation of how that equation came about, that is very valuable. Instead of endlessly searching or going on a page of a book or where was it, you know, now they can find it easily. So I think that it does have some advantages. But also the students who don't really want to learn and just want to turn in the assignments and get a grade, you know, that's a problem too. ChatGPT has hallucinations. So the hallucination is something that is not true, but is written as if it was true. You can already have it write fake facts and make it sound very legitimate. I think this is where society needs to embrace skepticism and question whether something is true or not. I've already seen several YouTube channels, and because of the linguist patterns I can identify, they created their script using ChatGPT. But I think the company OpenAI is onto it as well, and they're going to become just more sophisticated as we advance. The thing with all of this is that if there's a demand, there's going to be a supply. And there's already technology that attempts to find out whether something was used in writing AI technology. But I also saw an article recently saying that OpenAI was already working on a strategy to circumvent that. So even these pieces of technology are not able to catch on to it. As technology becomes more advanced, you know, there's going to be different packages that are going to cost more money and you'll be able to do more, just like any other business. But this disruptive technology, I think academia is going to take a really big hit towards the end of 2024.
You are listening to The Imaginary Possible, a show about the captivating potentials and the troubling realities of artificial intelligence today. I'm your host, Suzanne LeGrand, and this is KBOO Community Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
One thing that I see is that if everybody is using these technologies and they're on a subscription model, right, are we going to become beholden to, you know, the companies that own this technology and not be able to function without it? I mean, is this a new form of control via information?
We've already seen this happen with Google. People being on their phones and Googling everything, right? So we're going to start to see the same thing, people finding an easier solution using OpenAI to be able to search for information. So I think there will be a level of dependency. I definitely see that happening. But I also see a level of opportunity where there is already companies hiring people doing a prompt engineering. Just like, you know, for a lot of our new technologies, like people running YouTube channels. I have a friend who runs a YouTube channel in the UK. Makes the equivalent of $60,000 a month.
What most excites you about AI and its potentials?
It's going to change everything entirely. Well, I do a lot of Python scripting and also PowerShell scripting. And a lot of the times, based on my knowledge, I just prompt ChatGPT to create me a script. And I modify, and I just make small modifications. But I can do in minutes what would normally take me an entire day to complete. So this technology is definitely a huge advantage. It has its pitfalls. We are not going back from this. That's the thing about any form of AI. We're not going back. We're going forward.
A lot of people are worried about losing their jobs because of the way that it's going to start changing, you know, different industries. What do you think about that?
I think that a lot of jobs are going to be not necessarily completely eliminated, but absorbed, or less people are going to be hired. So there is a concern on that. Reading an article of this lady who does copywriting, and she said that her requests for work diminished so much because OpenAI is able to write very elegantly. I would say that if you give it a prompt to write a very compelling and emotional answer to a question in a scholarship application, it will put up some impressive stuff. I've seen it. And if you ask it interview questions, you know, in the tone, for example, in the tone of an engineer with 10 years of experience, tell me about your experience with Data Lake and a project that you worked on. It's so impressive. It gives you so much detail to that answer to that question. So I think that it's a lot of professions that are going to become dying professions, and professions that were already dying are going to be eliminated. So there's definitely a concern on that. I think that the best approach is to find the next level of skills to be able to succeed.
And what would those be in with respect to AI?
From being just a copywriter, become a designer. OpenAI is able, or any AI technology that is focusing on design right now, is able to create some beautiful designs, but it still doesn't have quite the human touch. But we're going to need to adapt. And if we're worried about our profession, I think that we have to look at what else can we offer? What else can we do? I think AI is a really powerful tool. For example, I have the group of a stock photo group of people, right? And then I have a picture of people who are, you know, real life people. But I want my real life people to look like office people, like this stock image. Well, I can transform the people based on the stock photo of the real people, so they are all, you know, all in suits and looking very professional with a really professional background in the office. Now I can put that on the website. and make it more professional. So I think there's a really big need of adaptation.
Absolutely.
And there's plenty of people willing to use the technology. It's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. Like, what about the rest of the world who, you know, maybe computers aren't their thing and programming and it's not what...
That's an excellent question. And let me answer you with this. We are already sitting in front of a computer constantly.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a safe assumption, probably.
Right. Well, it's true, but it's a question about, you know, is that the future we want to create? Is that, you know, all the jobs are going to involve programming or some version of having to have some skill on a computer in order to make a living? I mean, what about farmers?
I can answer you that. Because there's a book that I read on behavioral economics. I think the publishing was in Switzerland, and that's exactly what they're saying, that we're moving to an informational based workforce instead of an actual hand labor workforce that has been less used. And I think that as robots are introduced in the work labor, which a lot of companies already have them, but they become more sophisticated. I think that we're going to move away we're going to move farther and farther from human labor and move in an informational based.
Wow. And is that a good thing?
It's an adaptation thing.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to have a lot of pitfalls. Like, we don't like to see our kids like glued to their phones, but I think that we're going to see a lot more of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For people who are interested in learning more about AI, where should they start?
Try it for yourself. That's the only thing I can say. Try it for yourself. It's a rabbit hole. Once you begin to play with it, it's so addicting and it's so... have fun with it. I would say that we as human beings, worrying is the last thing that we should do.
Yeah.
This change is not going to go anywhere. So might as well enjoy it, get creative with it, have fun with it, have a good laugh. I mean, worrying about things is only going to stress you out. So, I mean, I've outputted some really funny things using DALL-E 3, and I show my family and they're like, dude, that's hilarious. You know, just have fun with it. Say my kids, I'm showing my kids how to use it, and they create really funny stuff as well. You know, just enjoy it.
So today on The Imaginary Possible, I've been speaking to data scientist, linguist, and owner of psilocybin training program, Edward James. If people want to find out more about what you do, where can they reach you?
Awakenaba.com.
Great. And that is the psilocybin training program that you run, right?
Correct.
Great. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're listening to The Imaginary Possible, a show about the captivating potentials and troubling realities of artificial intelligence today. I'm Suzanne LeGrand, and this is KBOO Community Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. To listen to this and other episodes of The Imaginary Possible, visit us online at kboo.fm or theimaginarypossible.com. Thanks so much for listening.